නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස As you all know, we were discussing Dvaitanupassana Sutta, which is one of the interesting suttas included in Sutta Nipata. Very interesting sutta, particularly for the ones who are deeply interested about the vipassana. So, how one is continuing one's practice, and different themes are highlighted in this sutta, how one may streamline one's vipassana practice. So, as I repeatedly mentioned, it is not for a kind of a beginner's practice, rather, as one continues one's vipassana practice at a particular point, he come to a kind of a conclusion. Okay, now I have to basically pay my attention to on these areas. So these are those themes or those topics, those set targets that one may come to as a conclusion, and those are actually categorized or listed down in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta as 16 such contemplations. The first one is based on the Four Noble Truths. We already discussed that. And then the second one is based on the Upadhi, the acquisitions. Now, how acquisitions are causing sort of suffering, and if one is able to relinquish all the acquisitions, how one may be able to maintain a life without suffering. And then the third one is based on the ignorance. Whatever suffering arises, that happens because of ignorance. And if one is able to overcome ignorance, abandon ignorance, then there won't be any suffering. And then the fourth one is based on the sankhara, the volitional activities. Whatever suffering arises, that happens because of sankhara, the volitional activities. And if one is able to calm down, relax, cease all the volitional activities, then there won't be any suffering. So basically, all these contemplations are coming as pairs. So that's why it is Dvaitanupassana Sutta. So it very much like duads are there. So all the contemplations are presented as a duad. And first one, basically, that means the first contemplation is very much based in the mundane side. The second one more promotes the supramundane attainment or supramundane realization. So that is how the whole sutta is very much like organized. And then the fifth one is how whatever the suffering arises, that happens because of the conditioned consciousness. When a consciousness established and deeply rooted and very much like finding a footing, and if it is possible to overcome that kind of a consciousness, the arising of such rooted, conditioned, well established consciousness, then there can't be any suffering. So that is the fifth contemplation listed here. Then the sixth one is based on the contact. How contact causes suffering, and if we are able to cease the contact, then we are able to overcome suffering. Then the seventh one is based on the feelings. Whatever suffering arises, that happens because of feelings, and if we are able to completely cease feeling, completely relinquish feelings without grasping, then there won't be any suffering. Then the eighth one is based on craving. Whatever suffering arises, it happens because of craving. And if we are able to abandon craving, there won't be any suffering. Now, this is actually the second noble truth, Dukkha Samudayang Arya Satcham. So that the cause of suffering is, they are also referred as the craving. Here in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta also, that has taken as one contemplation. Then the opposite is the cessation of craving. So that is the path to Nibbana. And that is listed as a second contemplation. And then ninth theme is very much based on the clinging. How clinging causes suffering. Whatever suffering arises, that happens when one's mind is clung to. When one's mind has grasped something. And if we are able to completely avoid any sort of grasping, then there can't be any suffering. So that is the ninth contemplation, ninth theme listed in this sutta. Then the tenth contemplation, what we discussed last time, is based on the instigation. So we instigate various actions, we continuously, intentionally start something, continuously, intentionally do something. So once Vipassana yogi come to a particular advanced point, so he realized this truth. So I was continuing the practice, I was coming from sort of calming down, or we can say refining all the attainments or refining all the experiences. But I wish another refined experience and gives up somewhat coarser experience. But still I am very much like trying to become something else, something more subtle, something more sublime. How about stopping that desiring nature, the becoming process? Keep and stop to bhavatanha. So that is the conclusion coming here. So whatever suffering arises, that happens because of the instigation. Oh, sabbang arambha paccha. So if one is able to avoid any kind of volitional instigation, volitional initiation of any activity, then his present state completely fades away, and ultimately he touches the nirodha, the cessation, and that is the end of suffering. And therefore, whatever suffering arises happens because of intentional instigation, intentional initiation of an action. But if one is able to completely abandon that, stop that, then one is maintaining the nibbanic state. So that we discussed last time as the 10th contemplation or the 10th theme listed in this sutta. Today we are going to discuss the 11th one. So that is based on the ahara, the nutriments. Yankinji dukkhan sambhoti sabbang ahara pachyati ayang ekanu passana aharanantveva asesa viraga nirodha natti dukkhasa sambhavoti ayang dutiyanu passana. Now whatever suffering originates is all conditioned by nutriment, and this happens as one contemplation. And if one is able to allow fading away of all the nutriments without any sort of grasping, if one is able to penetrate all, now one is not grasping any of those nutriments, then what happens is the cessation, that is where the suffering may be abandoned. Now we are coming to a very interesting area. So what are the nutriments? So before going to Dvaitanupassana Sutta further, so let us discuss about the four nutriments. So there are various places that the Buddha listed these four nutriments. So I have taken one example sutta available in the Samyutta Nikaya and Nidana Samyutta, where Buddha explained about the four nutriments. Chattaro me bhikkhave ahara, bhutanang va sattanang tithiya, sambhave sinang va anuggahaya. So basically Buddha mentioned there are four categories of nutriments. For the ones who already born, so those nutriments helps to maintain their lives. On the other hand, who are come to be, who are going through the birthing, getting the birth process, so these nutriments give certain assistance, the kind of a support. So without these nutriments, basically we can't maintain the life. So nutriments are in that sense an essential component. On the other hand, the issue is that we continuously grasp to these nutriments without properly understanding them. So that is where the issue lies. And here Buddha mentioned, so those four nutriments are listed in this particular sutta. Kabalinkaro aharo, passo ahara, mano sanchetana ahara, vinyanang ahara. So there are four categories of nutriments. First one is easy to understand, that is the typical audible food. that we all know. So we, they are gross, they are tangible, and we use our money to purchase, or maybe we cultivate and we prepare the food, and maybe then we are eating food, we are partaking food. So that is we usually do from the beginning of our lives, starting from mother's say feeding, and we then convert ourselves into eating, and then actually till the death we are eating something. So while eating, there is a possibility that we may compare ourselves with someone else, whether we get the best food or we didn't get the best food, or we can have certain kind of a desire for the food because it could be very delicious. So while eating, there could be a kind of a desire, kind of a greediness to the food. And probably, as I mentioned, we might compare ourselves with someone else. If we get a good opportunity, a good food, probably we might think, okay, we are quite gifted, we are quite lucky when compared to the others. So they are poor, they are miserable. So there could be such comparison, and there could be such conceit happens in our mind. Or there could be a competition for the food. So I want the best food and I don't want someone else to have that. So there could be a certain competition. And probably I don't want to share my food with someone else. There could be a kind of a miserliness involved with the food. And if I am eating too much, then I can get on to certain difficulties, certain illnesses, food related issues. So that is also there. And if I am somewhat stressed out, or I am going through some emotional stress, I can use food as a kind of a distraction. So that is also there. So food related stuff are fairly available. So when we are talking food, so it's a vast area. So basically what we are still talking is the typical edible food. So there are many different kinds of edible food. And some may be nutritious, some may be not. Some we are eating just for the sake of eating, just for the sake of satisfying our desires, craving. And some we may be eating because we are really hungry. So likewise, there are many areas that we can discuss when we discuss about this edible food. So Buddha's advice is therefore to minimize defilements happening during the eating process. So what Buddha advised is to use proper contemplations. One needs to use proper contemplations, then only one would be able to overcome whatever the kind of distractions or whatever kind of defilements arising in our minds. So therefore, particularly for the monks, with the advice, so while eating you should contemplate, why I am eating this food, what is the exact reason, what is the purpose. And again, we should be careful not to allow various defilements to arise because of the food. And these contemplations are therefore very valuable, because those help us to again remind us that we are eating food for the sake of maintaining this body and for the sake of continuing our practice. And this body actually depends on the food, so that's why I am putting some food inside. So likewise, we are sort of using the situation in the proper way without allowing desires to overwhelm the process. So we are basically, with some understanding, we are taking the food. So that is actually something advised by the Buddha, and that is what expected from the yogis, where they are quite careful about partaking of food and particularly not allowing defilements to overpower during this eating process. And here a very interesting and very profound example is a kind of a simile is given by the Buddha in this Putta Mansupama Sutta, where how one needs to regard this edible food, like what? So the example is given kind of a couple. They have a single son, a young son, and all three are now going to cross a desert, but unfortunately they don't have much provision. They don't have enough food, and they basically only have a limited amount of food, and ultimately they reach the middle of the desert and they lose all the food now. There's nothing available. Completely no food at all. Now they have to come to a conclusion. Are we all three going to die? Or is it possible to survive somehow? Now Buddha mentioned this as a simile. Okay, now that the mother and father decides, okay, rather than we three die, okay, let's kill the son and eat its flesh and just survive, and ultimately we too may be able to cross the desert. So they come to this very difficult decision and ultimately kill the son, and they prepare some food, and now they eat. Now Buddha is asking, while they eating that food, will there be any desire to greediness, any sort of greediness there, or any kind of a contemplation there, any kind of desire to sort of compete each other, any kind of desire to overwhelm another person, or any kind of desire to store the food? Are they merely taking the food just for the crossing this desert? Are there any desire to arouse or develop bodily attractiveness? Or are they eating it for the enjoyment? So the monks answer no. So basically, while they are eating, they may be even crying, because this is their only son. And basically, it's a very, very, very strong simile Buddha is giving there. So basically Buddha mentioned, okay, they are merely eating for the sake of crossing the desert. For the sake of crossing the desert. So you should look at the edible food with this angle, like this. So we are eating this food for the sake of crossing the desert. We are eating this food just for the sake of maintaining this body, so that we are able to continue the practice, we are able to continue this lifespan. That's the only thing. It is not for the enjoyment, it is not for the sake of physical beauty or attractiveness, not to sort of uplift our kind of status, rather just to continue this life. Without food, this body would die, so it's a kind of a requirement. So when we are keeping that kind of an attitude, so we can understand, okay, it doesn't allow us to have any kind of a defilement. Rather, we are keeping the food in the proper perspective. So it's a kind of a necessity that we are going through. Body requires it, and we are simply giving it, but without making any defilement. So there are further Buddha mentioned, Kabalikare bhikkave ahare parinyate pancha kama guniko rago parinyato hoti. So Buddha further mentioned, if one is able to thoroughly understand about the edible food, he say all different kinds of five chords of sensual pressure is fully understood. We know that through the eyes we like to see things, through the ears we like to hear songs, sounds, through the nose we like to smell odors, through the tongue we like to taste delicious delicacies, through the body we like to go through some good tangibles, desirable tangibles, tactile sensations. Now these are the ones actually we are going after, and always trying to look forward and trying to acquire. So Buddha mentioned, if one is having thorough understanding about edible food, kabalikara ahara, then Buddha mentioned, okay, one may thoroughly understand how we are desiring these five sense chords. So the five sense chords are somewhat aligned with the food. So this body dependent on the food, and we are continuously feeding it, and we are using the body to further and further satisfy our senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and this is what we are trying to do. So basically the food and the five sense cords are somewhat related. So basically Buddha mentioned, now you got to understand, okay, if one is able to understand these sensual desires, how one may have all different kinds of desires to these five sense cords: sight, sound, smell, taste and tangibles. So then slowly, slowly one may abandon that desire, and one may be able to even become a non-returner, anagami, because all these what we are talking in, at this level, is very much like related to the sensual world. So edible food is with the sensual world, and therefore if one is thoroughly understanding that and the sensual desires and the sense, five sense cords, so one may recognize its true nature, understand its true nature, and slowly abandon the desire, and ultimately one can overcome the sensual desire totally. So that means one may attain the anagami. So that is the kind of the story about the first type of ahara, first kind of nutriment, the kabalikara ahara, the edible food. Now second, Buddha mentioned about the passa ahara, the contact. The contact as the second category of food. So there are contact. So basically we have six senses, and through the eyes we go through sight, through the ears, through the sounds, through the nose, various odors, through the tongue, various tastes, through the body, various tangibles, and through the mind, various mental objects. So this is what we are continuously go through when we are using our faculties, the six senses. And so therefore this is difficult to stop this. When our eyes are open, either we like it or not, we have to see, we can see things. When our ears are healthy, basically there are various sounds in the environment, either you like it or not, you have to hear it. Suppose that you are going through a public vehicle, and there may be a very noisy sound available, and maybe the neighbors, the other passengers are also quite noisy, but you want to meditate, but very difficult, because they want to talk, they want to go through some gossiping. Or maybe the cassette recorder, the buffers are all quite noisy, they are sort of broadcasting huge noise, but you don't like, but unfortunately you have to bear it, because you have ears, and constantly all different kinds of sounds are bombarded, and you have to bear it. Our nose is continuously working. If there is a good smell or a bad smell, we have to go through it. And tongue also the similar. Sometimes we can taste some delicious stuff, but there are other instances we still can feel some undesirable kind of taste. Body also same. Sometimes we can go through some desirable tangibles, but there are other times where one may go through some bitter, terrible kind of sensations. Mind, on the other hand, when we are not restraining, continuously go through different kinds of thoughts, distracting thoughts, and we being driven by that, and we continuously think, and there is no rest to the mind, and continuously we suffer because limitless amount of mental objects are again and again coming to the mind, and we are very much like going through a sort of torturing. So therefore Buddha give a very beautiful simile here also. The contact, the nutriment contact, has to be seen as a flayed cow. A flayed cow where its skin is removed and now is completely exposed. And now if it is leaning towards a wall, there may be insects attached to the wall, they all come quickly and start attacking this cow because it's a flayed cow. There is no skin. Easily they can attack, they can start eating the flesh. So they come and attack her. Suppose now, in order to escape, she reaches a tree, under a tree. There may be birds, there may be other insects, beetles, etc. in the tree, associating the tree. They all come out quickly searching this flayed cow and they start attacking her. Now suppose she is going to the space in the sense there is nothing there. So the open space, kind of a ground, kind of a park. But still there are flying animals, flying creatures, maybe different kinds of flies, maybe mosquitoes, maybe birds. So they all come and they all start sensing it. They all come, land upon the flayed cow and they start attacking. Now suppose she's going to under the water, but unfortunately there are also different creatures are there. They start attacking her. So there is no escape. So very much like when we are looking our whole sense experience from this angle, so we understand even though they are necessary for us to live, but it's sometimes very much like torturing. We don't want to hear certain things, but unfortunately we have to hear them. We don't want to see certain things, but we have to see them. Smells, tastes, tangibles, thoughts are very similar. We know that whatever the thoughts that going through the mind may be completely useless, but mind continuously think about it. Sometimes ruminate. There may be an incident, heart-touching incident, maybe heart-breaking incident, but we don't want to, we may want to forget it, but mind continuously take it up and think about it. So kind of a torturing going on, even though we can't, even though we don't want, unfortunately we have to bear things because the senses are fully operative. So Buddha mentioned, if one is able to understand fully about this pasa ahara, Buddha mentioned he may see or fully understand the three types of vedana, three types of feelings. Because through the eyes when we are seeing, so a kind of feeling may arise. It may be a pleasurable feeling, it may be a painful feeling, or it may be a neutral feeling. Through the ears when we are listening, there could be a feeling, passapaccaya vedana. So the contact causes feeling. So feeling is one easy point for us to understand. So the contact, every time whenever a contact happens, there's a possibility of feeling to arise. So different feelings are there. Depending on the contact, the feeling is conditioned. So the contact is the determining factor about the feelings category. So if there is a particular contact which is causing pleasurable feelings, then the pleasurable feeling may arise. If there is a contact which is causing painful feelings, then the painful feelings may arise. If there is a contact which causes neutral feelings, then the neutral feeling arise. So the feelings are fully dependent on the type of contact, the sort of contact. So therefore, if we thoroughly understand the contact, that means we are thoroughly understand the feeling as well. So they are going together very much like, they are dependent. The feeling is completely dependent on the contact. Now, thoroughly understanding feelings, as we already discussed, helps to minimize the desire towards those feelings, penetrate them, and ultimately we are able to overcome them. So we are not no more grasping the feelings. Contacts may happen, but slowly, slowly we are able to avoid grasping those resultant feelings. Now we don't grasp the contact. So very much like contacts have ceased, our mind has withdrawn from this contact. Even though seeing is there, but mind is not getting involved. Even though hearing is there, mind is not getting involved. Even though the taste, touching is there, mind is not getting involved. And similarly, if there are even thoughts coming, mind is not interested, we simply allow them to pass. So very much like ditte dittamattam bhavissati, sute sutamattam bhavissati, mute mutamattam bhavissati, vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati. So one may be able to maintain a mentality, a kind of a developmental state, without attaching to anything. So if one is able to thoroughly understand this contact, the passa ahara, so Buddha say he would become an arahant. Natthi kinchi uttarin karaniyanti vadami. The previous one, the kabalikara ahara, he tell us, okay, if one is thoroughly understand, fully understand, he can ultimately become an anagami, an unreturner. But the second nutriment, the contact, if one thoroughly understand, he can even become an arahant. So you can see the gravity of this practice, so this thorough understanding about the whole process. So keeping an eye about the contact, how our senses are operating and how we are tempt to think about them, we are tempt to proliferate about them, and having understand that we are minimizing the proliferation, we are minimizing the thinking, but the senses are operating, but now it becomes a mere sensing process. We are not very much like interested about reacting to any of these. And one may see, okay, how they are coming and going, how they are rising and passing away. So that kind of a practice ultimately helps to minimize craving, avoid craving, and ultimately mind may liberate, because one is not reacting. One is not impulsively reacting to anything. Rather, one may see how things are happening, how they arise and pass away, how they appear and then disappear. So this sort of practice ultimately takes one to the full understanding. So this is the passa, the contact, as the second nutriment Buddha tells, Buddha discusses. Okay, then the third nutriment, it is called Manosanchetana Ahara. Manosanchetana Ahara, the nutriment mental volition. So mental volition, we always want to act, we always want to do. We are intentionally doing something. So we can see the intentional doing is some sort of a nutriment. So that's why people can't stop that. People sometimes want that because it's a kind of a nutriment. It boosts one's ego. So you want to do something so that your ego is boosted. Your self-view is somewhat highlighted. Your self is somewhat highlighted. Your personality is shown when you are doing something, when you are intentionally acting on something. So that basically helps to boost our ego, and so that we can sort of show our colors, show our potential, show our skills by doing something. So we are continuously like to do something. So that is, we last time also we discussed, so how this doing process is continuously attached to us. We are fond of doing something. And kamma ramo hoti kamma rato. So that is explained further in Dhamma. So we are people who are motivated to do something. So always want to do something, always want to change, always want to make a revolution, always want to make it better. So you want to progress, you want to win, you want to defeat others. So always geared to do something, well motivated to do. So that all shows how that desire is there and how that doing actually promotes a self and how that doing actually acts as a nutriment to sustain our self-view, sustain ourselves. It is not merely the body now we are talking. Now we are very deeply we are going through the mental landscape, the passa ahara, how continuously we are going through various different kinds of contact when the senses are operating. So we can't keep these senses as it is. We want to feed them. You can't simply keep your eyes closed. You want to see something so that you are sort of excited. You are sort of become happy by seeing. You don't want to keep your ears simply dumb. You want to hear something. So we are continuously hearing maybe music, maybe songs, smelling, tasting, touching, and ultimately even thinking. So you don't want to keep the mind empty. I want to think. So by thinking, we are providing some kind of a nutriment. Similarly, by seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, so we are continuously giving something. So similarly here also, using manosanchetana ahara, we have volitional activities. I want to volitionally do some bodily activity. I want to volitionally do some verbal activity. I want to talk, I want to speech, I want to sing, I want to recite. So verbal activities are there, volitional verbal activities. Or else there are volitional thinking. So you are contemplating, you are thinking and all that, the volitional activities. Now volitional activities, by the way, causes karma. It promotes karma. So when we are a person, we manifest as a person, and that person want to do something, now he is doing maybe a bodily activity, and ultimately we get the potential of karma. Maybe at a later time, so that action may give fruits as a karma vipaka. Similarly, I want to tell something, and when I am talking, when I am speaking, maybe I am using some harsh words, someone else may be hurt. So I might have to pay for that. So because I am a person here, manifested as a person, as an individual, I am purposely hurting someone using my bad speech, and now the karma is generated, karma is accumulated. There may be a later time that I may have to go through that vipaka, the result. So the unfortunate part is that by intentional doing, so we are accumulating karma. So similarly the thoughts, so I might go through maybe covetousness, some completely unrightful kind of a desire, and I am again and again thinking about that. So the mind gets polluted and may come generated. Similarly, I may have some sort of revengeful thoughts, maybe angry thoughts, which are so intense. That also can provoke the mind and ultimately can create karma. So basically all these three areas basically shows some kind of a generation of karma. Buddha gave another strong simile here also. He mentioned that there is a man who see there is a pit which is filled with glowing coals, but there is no flame, there is no smoke, but he knows very well it is burning. So burning coal is there inside that pit, and he don't want to go there. He don't want to get burned by that, because he knows it's a utter suffering if I get dropped there, if I am falling to that. So it will be a real suffering. He knows that. But unfortunately, there is two strong men who grab him from both arms. Now they too are dragging him towards that coal pit, charcoal pit. And Buddha asks, so what would be the mentality of this man? Now he knows very well, if I am going to be put there, so I will be going through utter suffering and I might even die. So his mind is completely trying to get rid of this whole thing. Even though those two strong people are dragging him, so he is using his willpower, maybe his strength to avoid it. Because he knows, I will fall into this charcoal pit, and on that account I will meet death or deadly suffering. So that's why he is trying to resist. Now Buddha says you need to look at the volitional activity, this manosanchetana ahara, volition related nutriment like this. Now this is a very interesting simile. So why Buddha is giving such kind of a simile? Now actually we need to understand, okay, these all volitional activities are creating karma. It may be wholesome karma, it may be unwholesome karma. So if we are intentionally doing something, either it may create wholesome karma or either we may create unwholesome karma. Ultimately, those karma will bear fruits. And we have to go through. We have no escape. We are very much like karma bound. And if we know that, so we need to stop it. All the intentional activities, as we discussed last time, sabbang arambha paccaya, yankinchi dukkhan sambhoti sabbang arambha paccaya. Whatever suffering arises, that happens because of these instigations, volitional instigations. Similarly, here also we can understand how volitional activities are causing wholesome and unwholesome karma, and ultimately they bear fruits and we have to go through it. So that is the suffering part. So therefore, if one sees through those volitional activities, then one starts minimizing them. As we discussed last time, so it's a kind of a slowly minimizing those volitional activities. If it happens only for you, it is coming only on to ourselves, there is no escape, then probably we can do it, but we are not going and asking for work. So that's kind of an attitude. Because you understand, okay, it is intentional activities are a burden. I need to maintain kind of relaxed mentality without grasping anything. If something comes on my way, okay, I'm doing it for the best of my ability. I'm not neglecting it or ignoring it. But again, I am careful of not to create a self out of that activity. So likewise, one may go through these volitional activities in a more wise manner. Without intentionally immediately acting, one may have some sort of a discretion what to do and what not to do. He has that ability to recognize, okay, is this some suitable activity for me to get involved, or is it not suitable? Has it come on my way allowing or requesting me to attend, or is it possible for me to avoid it so that someone else may be doing it? I am not the only one who is capable of doing it. But anyway, if it is coming onto my direction, there is no anyone else, so it is my duty, then probably I may have to do it. So likewise, so Buddha's advice here is to understand how we have a desire to feed ourselves, boost our ego through work, through our maybe creativity or through our intentional activity, through our different kinds of works. So how we are boosting a self. So if we are able to penetrate this intention, if we are able to penetrate this kind of a tendency available in the mind, we may be doing something but without promoting a self. So then we have some kind of a escape without promoting any defilements. So that is the third category of ahara, and there also Buddha mentioned if one is thoroughly understanding the third nutriment, mano sanchetana ahara, Buddha say, okay, one may understand the three categories of tanha, the craving. So when one understands craving thoroughly, so one can even attain an arahant. The last category of ahara, the nutriment, is the vijnana ahara. How we always want our mind to establish on something. We want our eyes to see something and we want to dwell in that sight. We want to hear some music and we want to dwell in that sound, maybe the music. We want to smell something and we want to dwell our mind there, keep our mind there, fully involve our mind there. And we may want to taste something and we want to keep our mind get involved in that taste. Maybe various bodily sensations and we want our mind to fully involve there. So there are thoughts available in the mind. We want to think, overthink, proliferate, and mind is fully occupied with thinking. So very much like we are allowing the mind to get established, allowing the mind to get completely involved. So that is what we typically do. So the consciousness is allowed to get entangled. Consciousness is allowed to get established. We don't know how to maintain it without any kind of an establishment. We don't know how to maintain a free mind, completely kind of liberated type of a mind, without consciousness get established. Actually, we discussed to some extent while we are discussing this point in the fifth contemplation, the suffering arises because of consciousness. The same thing actually here very much we have to talk. How suffering arises because of this established consciousness. Again and again we are seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching and thinking. But all those activities promote maybe a self thinking that I am the one seeing, I am the one listening, I am the one smelling, I am the one tasting, I am the one going through some tangibles, I am the one thinking. Either I am creating a self onto the external sense base, or I am creating a self into the internal sense base. A promotion of one self. And on the other hand, consciousness is continuously getting involved in this entanglement with the name and form. Nama, Rupa and Vijnana, they are in continuous entanglement. Nama Rupa supports consciousness. Consciousness supports Nama Rupa. So there's an interrelationship between these two, and they are going through this entanglement. So we don't know how to break it. We don't know how to untangle it. So we are continuously allowing mind to get involved with something, fill our mind with various garbage, fill our mind with various objects without maintaining the clarity of the mind, the transparency of the mind, the purity of the mind. We continuously fill our mind. So we can see how there's a tendency in our mind to fill the mind, to locate the mind, to establish the mind at somewhere. Without maintaining a free mind, without maintaining an unestablished mind, we always want to get involved, occupy the mind. Now, Buddha gives a very interesting simile here also, how the consciousness nutriment has to be looked like. So there he mentioned, okay, there is a criminal, a bandit, who being caught is now taken to the king, and the soldiers are asking, this he's a criminal, he's a bandit, we were able to find it, catch him. Now the great king, you may give a some kind of a punishment. Now king orders, okay, you got to strike him using 100 spears in the morning. So they take this man and they use the sharp spears and they strike him 100 times. And then during the afternoon, actually the king asks, is that man still alive? And the men speaks, they are telling, yes, majesty, he's still alive. And then king order, okay, you give better another 100 spears strikes to this man, to this bandit. So they give another 100 spear strikes. Maybe in the night or in the evening, again king asks from that soldiers, how about that fellow? Is he still alive? And then that man replies, yes, he's still alive. Okay, give him another 100. Now Buddha is asking, what do you think, monk? How about striking 300 spears like this to a man? Is it kind of a suffering? And then monks actually answer, Bhante, how about 300? Even a single strike of spears is an utter suffering. There's no point of talking about 300. It's utter suffering. So you got to see the consciousness nutriment like this. So why Buddha is giving this kind of a simile? So that's also a very interesting area to explore. Why Buddha is giving this kind of a simile for the consciousness nutriment? Actually, we can't understand it if we don't have experience a kind of a clarity of the mind. If we don't have experience the unattached nature of the mind. unestablished nature of the mind. So if one is continuing one's practice at a deeper level, one may be able to touch this unattached, non-grasping state of mind, where mind becomes completely free, no defilements, no attachments, no stress, no object, no self-view, and mind is in a kind of a silence, stillness and purity. But maybe temporary, because still the defilements are there, to the amount of wisdom that what we have generated through our vipassana practice, one may be able to enjoy this purity, this clarity, this stillness, this silence. The more one have thorough experience in this state, one may understand, okay, what a difficulty to have various thoughts in the mind. So how it's a burdening. So you may have kind of a clarity in the mind, you have the unattached purity in the mind, but now again a thought happen, it may getting impure. It again get burdened. Another attachment happens, again get burdened. Grasping happen, again get burdened. A distraction happen, again get burdened. Maybe smelling, touching, tasting, all that happen, those are very much like ripples in the mind. Mind was in the clarity, mind was in stillness. But unfortunately, these senses are very much like making it more turbulent. So the name and form is like that. So the moment that a name and form appear in the mind, so there's a possibility that consciousness get entangled with it. Another name and form appear, again get entangled. Another name and form appear, again get entangled. So very much like we are losing the clarity. Again and again, we are very much like polluting the mind. We had kind of a purity because of the practice, but because of the attachment to these nutriment, consciousness nutriment, we allow the name and form, nama rupa, to come and pollute the mind, come and occupy the mind. So continuous thinking is very much like this. Various thoughts again and again coming and bombarding the mind. So 300 spheres torturing the mind. Maybe various sounds, sights, smells, tastes, tangibles. If they are promoting some sort of thoughts also, kind of an entanglement, again, sort of torture in the mind. We can't keep the mind relaxed. We can't keep the mind unestablished. Rather, again and again, the consciousness go and establish. So this is how we need to understand. So if one is able to maintain a very pure state of mind without any attachment, without any establishment, so that is the state of the Arahant, where the clarity is there. No more any kind of entanglement. So there Buddha mentioned, if one understands thoroughly about the consciousness, he may thoroughly understand the Nama Rupa as well. So they are interdependent, so he may become an Arahant. You can see the how powerful these contemplations are, and so that's why in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta, Buddha summarize Yankinchi dukkhan sambhoti sabbang ahara paccha aharana nirodhena natti dukkhasa sambhavo. So whatever suffering arises, it originates all from the nutriments. If we are able to abandon nutriments, then there is no suffering. Etamadinavan nyatva dukkhang ahara paccaya sabbaharam parinyaya sabbaharam anisitu. So Buddha mentioned, so one may understand that, he penetrate that, and he thoroughly knows the operation. He thoroughly knows the operation of the kabali karahara, the edible food. He thoroughly knows the operation about the pasahara, the contact. Manosanchetanaha, the volitional activities. Vinyanaha, the consciousness nutriment. So he thoroughly knows that. He sees the tendencies available in the mind to get fed by those four nutriments. Now slowly, slowly, he is minimizing that. If necessary, maybe edible food is necessary, he may take it time to time, but without attachment, with proper contemplations, as much as possible, maintaining the mind free from the other three categories of contact, other three categories of nutriments. Sabbaharam anisito. Even while taking the nutriments, maintaining an unattached mindset without grasping them. Arogyam sammadanyaya asavanam parikkhaya. So Buddha mentioned, okay, by having correctly understood this state, so he is now allowing the influxes, asavas, to fade away. Because now he is not promoting any of these. He is not promoting lust, he is not promoting anger, he is not promoting delusion. So basically the defilements are slowly abandoned. Sankhaya sevi dhammatto sankhang nopeti vedaguti. So if one is going through such kind of a thorough practice, Buddha mentioned, so he becomes more firm in the Dhamma, and ultimately he becomes an Arahant, and now his living is very much not in line with the typical worldly behaviors. He cannot be designated as a person, as so and so, as a whatever, because he has penetrated the whole thing. We can't reckon him in the typical conventional way, because he has penetrated that whole living, whole delusion, whole illusion he has penetrated. Okay, those are very interesting and very profound teachings by the Buddha. And as I discussed, these are not really meant for a beginner. But as one is continuing one's practice, maybe he may come to a understanding, okay, these are the four nutriments. So they are the ones actually feeding. They are the ones ultimately causing suffering. I better penetrate these four kinds of nutriments, so that ultimately I am not attached to any of these nutriments. So he basically overcome influxes and become an Arahant. So this is another theme highlighted as the 11th theme in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta. With that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Ishan, you can unmute and talk.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, and I hope when I'm asking the question, there is no echo.
Can you hear any
question? Yeah.
Geshan, can you hear?
I can hear well.
Okay, fine. No echo, right?
Yes, I can hear. Can you? Today I'm not hearing the echo. So
good. Okay,
but,
fine. Fine.
When the okay, so let me get to the question. Thank you. So today is about the nutrients as the ahara, and I just want to talk about the very first, which is the Kabalinka Hatra. So the way that I understood, if we sort of we have to do this when we consume food, we just consume food in order to keep this body maintained, not just because of there is this hunger and just to fulfill that hunger, but then there is the part of when I see some food, I'm not hungry at this moment in time, but there is food that on the table for me to sort of consume it on my as I walk past. No, so I see it, I sort of stop and consume it. So the way that I have understood, you restrain, you sort of make certain type of boundary, and then to live with rather than, you know, thinking, even though there is that desire comes, I have to have that discipline and say, no, it is not the time for me to consume food. But on the flip side of it, it's not that since I don't have the desire or I don't have the hunger, so I shouldn't have the desire. But I can see the food and there is no desire for me to sort of consume that food. Is that my understanding, Bhante? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think it's accurate. Basically, as you said, even though we don't have hunger, there could be a desire to eat when we see or motivated by the food. There may be a very good smell and the way they are, you know, the wrapped or prepared. So they are, we are tempted to eat, but there is no hunger. So that is the point that we need to understand: the greed, the desire available in the mind and promotes desires. And as you said, at that moment, if we convince ourselves, okay, there is no real need to eat, I'm not hungry, I already had food, and then it's a kind of a restrainment. Correct?
Yes, so I think initially, but we have to sort of make certain type of restraint. And then sort of the second phase automatically comes into you, I guess. That is how I have felt, rather than, you know, there was a desire for me to eat, but I say, no, it's not the time that I should be consuming food. So my second phase of that question on the patso side, the vinyane, which has the king to order 100 spheres for this individual, and then in the morning and the evening and so on and so forth. It talks about a sphere or any type of, even a needle when it hits on to us. You know, like we trample a small rock, you feel that pressure, just the fear itself, or you feel much more harder or much more painful, per se. And I could not sort of see the relation at this moment, maybe how that vinyana and if you get this type of understanding or the certain signal comes and you recognize into your mind, and how in having that type of you know, the ideas or the comes into your mind. Is that the reason why it's been sort of talk of having that sharp fear thing? Is that the reason?
No, I think it may represent different kinds of, I mean, different ways actually we can recognize, because name and form constitutes five elements. Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. So there may be situations, the mind is occupied with the feelings. And there may be situations, mind is occupied with various perceptions, Sanya, various marks, signs. And there are situations, the mind is somewhat geared and motivated by various intentions. And then there are situations where we are going to some sensory contact, and the contact is somewhat become the prominent factor. And there are situations we are interested on particular fact and we are paying our attention to this and that, so some sort of an idea. and that is there. So likewise, there are, I mean, if we consider the name and form, the name and form, as I discussed, there are, as it is mentioned in the Dhamma, there are five categories: Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. There are feelings, there are perceptions, there are volitions, there are contact, and there are intentions. So these are the categories, how we get entangled, how the consciousness get entangled into name and form. There are often, actually, we can recognize how the perceptions are coming to the mind, how various images, mental images are coming to the mind, and slowly, slowly start occupying the mind. Suppose that you had a completely transparent mind. There is nothing there. Basically, it's very luminous.
Yes.
And completely empty. But slowly, there may be a mental image appear in the mind. Without much consideration, you start being interested about it and you attribute a person to it. And now different thoughts are attached to it. And now further images are appearing. Now further images are appearing. Now slowly, slowly it is growing. And ultimately, mind gets fully occupied by various mental images and thoughts. So likewise, so all these five categories are capable of occupying the mind, capable of filling the mind. And those are very much like, I feel the strikes, spear strikes. But we don't feel
okay.
it, we don't feel it that much because it's a very subtle phenomena, we don't feel it that much. But when Buddha highlights to that level, I feel it has such an intense, because maybe, say for example, the one who is fairly dwelling in emptiness, who is fairly maintaining a free mind, a pure mind, unestablished mind, for him, a single thought may appear like a spear strike. Because it's burdening the mind, it is striking the mind, it's making a ripple in the mind. So he may feel it thoroughly. But for the others who are often thinking too much, and very rarely get the freedom of the mind, they may not get that kind of a intense situation, because they are continuously going through the torturing. But for the other side, if one is now more and more dwelling in emptiness, more and more trying to maintain a free mind, unattached mind, without any name and form, but all of a sudden immediately a thought happened, immediately maybe an intention happen, immediately a mental image happen, so that may be a little disturbing factor. Probably we can consider that as a strike of a spear. That's what basically I like to interpret it, so that we are more careful of how we are handling our mind, without simply, you know, occupying the mind, keeping the mind empty as much as possible, silent as much as possible.
Yes, Bhante, thank you so much. I think you draw a very vivid picture by with your answer, and in me, because my understanding was earlier, which I tried to explain the two differences, but I think for a mind that is sort of always have gone into prapancha itself is like maybe a strike. But what I was initially trying to sort of paint the picture, thinking a mind that has a nothingness, and then the moment image just appears as such, and that itself is a strike. But I think it depend on the individual sort of ability to see their mind and where it can keep it in a calm manner.
Exactly.
And that can be a check as well.
Hmm.
So,
yeah.
Thank you for the explanation.
Yeah.
Turuan Saranai.
Yeah. Turuan Saranai.
Radhika, you can unmute and talk.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My question is not exactly on this today's topic, but I have heard you use the word vimukti, and I have also seen Chetho Vimukti and Panya Vimukti.
Yes, yes.
So when you use the word, are there three different Vimuktis? Or when the word Vimukti is used, like for example in Chulla Vedana Sutta by Mehin Vahanse Dhammadina, or even in the Sabhavasava Sutra, which one is it? Like when they just use the word Vimukti, is that the same as either Cheto or Vimukti? I don't know what these three, I have seen all three used, and I don't know which is which, or if there are three, or whether Vimukti is always one of Cheto Vimukti and Panya Vimukti, or is there three different types of Vimukti?
Yeah, actually there's a very interesting series of suttas or Dhamma sermons we discussed in one of the previous retreats at Nisarnavanaya, Dutiya Cheto Vimutti Pala Sutta. I'll try to share the link. So that's fairly interested and fairly profound, and probably you can listen to that also. Then you can see there's a huge amount of information is there, and different categories of Cheto Vimutti is there. And here the Cheto Vimutti is very much like the complete liberation of the mind. It can happen even through the Samatha practice, and it can happen even through the Vipassana practice. The Panya Vimutti is where your defilements are completely abandoned and asavas are completely eradicated. So that is the Panya Vimutti. So the Cheto Vimutti is not a must for one to become an arahant, but Panya Vimutti is a must. If both are available, then one is called Ubhato Bhaga Vimutta, where the complete liberation through the influxes, the asavas are also there, the Panya Vimutti, that is also there. And he has certain, Samatha practices as well, so as a result of that he can have those tranquility states as well. So then it is called Ubhuto Bhaga Vimutta. So therefore it's a kind of a vast area. So probably you can listen to that Dhamma sermons. I'll give you the link in the chat. So please try to go through that as well.
Okay, thank you. So I want one more clarification, please.
Yeah.
Now, I thought that when the word Cheto Vimukti is used, that meant there was a subtle Chetana there, that there was a little bit even of volition, and as such, it could not be Nibbana. Maybe that you have still some bhava, maybe at least like a some kind of craving, maybe not the karma, but maybe like a craving for bhava or vibhava or something, because the word cheto is still there, and I thought cheto referred to chetana.
No, wrong.
Cheto can be through some other, yes, that's fine, but it can also be the same as Nibbana. Or because in Chulla Vedala, Mehenin Vahansi says, if you have Vimukti, there is still some more to do. That's why I was thinking, okay, so that means this Vimukti, whatever Visakha and Mehenin Vahansi, Dhammadina are talking about, or were referring to, is either something like karma is gone, but maybe the Bhavatana or Vibhavatana is still there, and that's why she said there's still some more work to do for Nibbana. But if I see the word Panya Vimukti, it looks like it's Nibbana.
Yeah, we can say the Panya Vimukti is the complete eradication of asavas.
Right,
it's the Kinasava,
right?
Kinasava
right.
State.
Yes.
But the Cheto Vimukti you can even take using even a Samatha meditation. Say for example, if you are practicing Metta meditation, and if you are able to emanate Metta, spread Metta towards the whole universe without any boundary, without any limit, So that is where you are attaining the metta cheto vimukti. Complete freedom of mind through loving kindness, which is limitless.
But that is not even sotapanna.
No,
that
no, no.
Comes and goes.
Yes, yes.
That's not the same as that is just like a kind of samadhi, right?
Correct.
Because it's a samadhi, because it's not sotapanna, sakadagami, or any of those, because that has because it doesn't come all the time. It can come and go. In other words, it's not a unestablished thing, because there is something happening still. I don't know what.
Yeah. So still defilements are there.
Say, that is not one of the four margapala. That is a kind of samadhi, right?
Correct.
But, the panyavi.
Yeah, Panya Vimukti is the arahant shape.
Right. So, Cheto Vimukti is then definitely what... Chula Vedala Sutra, she could not have been referring to Cheto Vimukti because of the fact that Visakha was Upasika was an anagami. So, it could not have been Metta, because Metta doesn't take you to anagami. So what was she referring to there as vimukti?
No, she's interpreting the now the question asked by Visakha, Vijaya Panaye Kim Patibhagoti. So what is the ultimate of the knowledge? Then Dhammadinna is answering Vijaya Kho Auso Visakha Vimukti Patibhagoti. So the knowledge, the ultimatum, is the complete freedom. That is the panya vimukti, basically. The knowledge here refers to the different kinds of insights, thorough understanding, seeing things as they truly are, those insight knowledges. So the ultimate result is all the defilements are abandoned, all the ignorance is abandoned, all the asavas, influxes are abandoned, and one attains arhantship. That is the panya vimukti. So there she refers as the panya vimukti. So that's why the next question asked by Visakha, so what is the vimuttyapanaye kim pati bhagavati? Now he is asking further, I mean, what is the ultimatum of the vimutti? Then Dhammadinna says, you didn't know the end of the question. This is the end. Nibbanam pati bhagavati. Nibbana is the end. Nibbana is the end. So when one is reaching the end of the knowledge, end of the vimutti, yes. So that is the ultimate nibbana, the panya vimutti. So after that, nothing.
Yeah, that's right. I have written the, or I have written this into Chula Vedala Sutra again, because I thought it was first vimutti. And then when he asks, okay, what more is there? I don't know the Pali words. Then she says, oh, then it's Nibbana. And then he says, and what comes after Nibbana? And then she says, you have gone too far. There is
nothing more.
So maybe I understood that wrong. I will look at that again. Can you please give me that link also?
The Chula Vedala Sutta link?
No, Chula Vedala Sutta I have, because I can get it. I did with you, I think.
Yeah.
Or with one.
So what do you need?
The sutra you sent that.
Yeah, I already sent. Already put to the chat.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, Therivan Sannai. So basically, when one has certain amount of knowledge, to that amount the mind can get liberated. So that is also vimutti, but it's a temporary kind of a vimutti. But still attained through the knowledge. It happened because of the knowledge. And that's why he's asking, so what is the ultimatum? So that is where the Nibbana, where complete eradication of the defilements, so the complete freedom is there. All the defilements are abandoned, so the complete freedom is there. So that is the end of it. So then it is not a temporary one. Basically, all the defilements are abandoned, so the mind is utterly freed. So the freedom is the vimutti. That freedom can become temporary during the vipassana process, but as you are continuing that process, all the refinements are abandoned, then you reach the complete freedom.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Nilini, you can unmute and talk.
Sorry, Swami Pal, sir.
Oh.
My question is with regards to last week's instigation. I'm wondering, I know you emphasized that it is for an advanced practitioner. I'm wondering, an occult person who is not an advanced practitioner, when they are doing sitting meditation, when the breath becomes very subtle and then the breath completely goes away and then there is no feeling of the body and there's complete silence, there's nothing and not clinging to anything and the mind is still and not agitated, and at that stage mind is not grasping anything. So I'm wondering, is that something that then we are not doing any volitional activity? Is that a state?
Yeah, definitely. We can't do any volitional activity. So if we are doing further volitional activities, then it is no more silence, no? Again, we are initiating something. Again, we are instigating something. So we are not allowing the mind to get rest, relax.
And my other question is, when I was doing my sitting meditation today and when there was a painful feeling arising and I paid attention to the painful feeling and I saw it as after a while it became just a vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could feel the whole body vibration, and after a while that vibration, I felt like it's also the outside vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So then that was it, Swami answer. So I thought I'll just report that to you.
Yeah. That can happen because basically, you know, that there can be a difference in the perception. Sometimes, say for example, breath can appear like very close to us. Sometimes breath can appear very far away. So we are at far away place and the breathing body may appear another very far away place. So likewise, the perception can vary. So similarly, when we are observing various feelings, we can get such kind of different perceptions. So we may feel like, okay, I am observing feelings very close to it. I may be observing feelings like an outsider. I may be observing feelings from a far place. So likewise, the perception can vary. These things actually change. I mean, you don't need to worry too much about it.
Thank you, Swami. So you can clarify what's in my mind.
Okay.
Thank you,
Thiruvan Sarnai. Okay, since there is no more questions, then we'll wind up the session. So today also we are able to discuss some Dhamma and discuss certain Sutta teachings from the Buddha. So all these merits, let's wish we are sharing with all the past relatives, all celestial beings and whoever need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to realize Buddha's teaching and attain path fruition Nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadhu sadhu sadhu.